You are listening to Gangland Wire, hosted by former Kansas City Police Intelligence Unit Detective Gary Jenkins.
Well, welcome all you wiretappers out there. I'm here on the Skype and the podcast with our good friend and mob museum blogger from down south of me, Larry Henry. Welcome, Larry.
Thanks, Gary. It's great to be here.
All right, folks, don't forget, hit me up on the Venmo, buy me a cup of coffee, you know, at Gangland Wire, you know, just a couple of $3. I'd like to have a Starbucks cup of coffee. You know, they're awfully expensive. I'm just kidding out there. You can buy me a shot and a beer, too, as a few of you guys have bought. So we gotta do something to keep paying Blueberry for keeping this podcast up, and every little bit helps. Well, Larry, I've been watching and reading your mob museum blog, and it's really interesting. They're like short and sweet and tell stories that I like those individual stories, and that's what you're a master at out there in that mob museum. How long have you been doing that?
Almost a couple of years now, Gary. I've done it for another site for a while, a different blog, and then almost 2 years ago, I started writing that monthly blog post for the Mob Museum. It's called The Mob in Pop Culture. Every month I try to take a look at something that's going on with books and movies in the mob world.
Interesting. You were a newsman in Las Vegas for quite a while during a lot of those activities that I talk about in my film Gangland Wire.
Yeah, I was in Las Vegas. I was at the Las Vegas Sun. I was up in Reno at the Reno Gazette Journal. And I was down in Las Vegas at the Las Vegas Sun. I was out in Nevada for almost 20 years. And so, yeah, that was, I ended up working at the Sun in the mid-90s and was in Nevada through the late 90s.
Yeah, so you never met Lefty Rosenthal and Tony Splatro. You never gambled with them in the Stardust, huh?
Not to my knowledge, but the Stardust was open, and I'm a little bit of a memorabilia junkie, and so I've got some memorabilia from those days, including from the Stardust.
Oh, great. Well, folks, we want to get on with it. This last blog piece that you put up, Larry, I thought was really interesting, and a guy that I want to do maybe a really in-depth dive on one of these days, Johnny Roselli from the Chicago Outfit. He's such an interesting guy, he came from New York, I believe, didn't he?
He was from Boston. He was born in Italy and born in 1905 and came over later, I think around 1911. His dad had come over earlier. His dad died young, Gary, and he sort of bounced around as a teenager in some criminal activity. This was the bootlegging era, and he bounced around from Boston with a friend of his, another criminal associate, young guy, teenager, both teenagers, went up to Chicago and then over to Los Angeles. He said to the Kefauver Commission he ended up in Los Angeles when he was about 15, so that would have been around 1920. But so he bounced around a lot as a teenager, ended up in Los Angeles in Hollywood, and got really connected with that bootlegging crowd out in Los Angeles. Gary, those ships, those gambling ships offshore, and the bootlegging groups out in L.A., and established himself with the movie crowd, with actors and producers and directors and people like that, and began to have a lot of influence as time went by, not as a teenager, but as time went by industry.
Another interesting thing about that whole early time in Los Angeles, which we're going to get into, how he's connected to some real deal movies and help make real movies, which is kind of the real subject of this thing. But he got involved with a guy named Tony Conejo, who was a bootlegger out in Los Angeles, and he worked for him. And they were kind of loosely connected to Jack Dragna. He was he was Italian, so he had to move in those circles, and they had to kick up to Jack Dragna's, no doubt about it. Conejo was going to run a bootlegging operation. So he started out just like all these other guys did back east or in Chicago and Taylor Street area, working in the bootlegging business. And then, you never know what connections you're going to make, Larry, when you're young. And you probably had that in your own life. I know I haven't. And Conejo ends up building the first kind of fancy Las Vegas casino called the Meadow Club God, I have to look at my notes here, but I believe it was the Meadow Club. It was for Bugsy Siegel and all of them. He built a really nice club out there in what would eventually become the Strip, which would be outside of town.
Yeah, that early Los Angeles crowd got involved in Las Vegas, definitely, before, you know, then the New York crowd moved in with Bugsy Siegel. And, you know, Roselli, it's funny, Gary, because Roselli was really associated with a lot of different syndicate groups from different cities. For instance, Roselli was involved in the early days in the Tropicana, which opened in 1957. Roselli was kind of a go-between. The New Orleans crowd was involved in that, the Chicago crowd, the New York crowd. And Roselli was sort of a person, he was known as a mob fixer in Los Angeles and Las Vegas, and helped facilitate a lot of the pulling together of the Tropicana. Even lived there after it opened, and had the gift shop concession, had the parking concession. So that was kind of his thing, Gary. He was a guy who sort of he was the person you went to get things done in Las Vegas. Now, also back west to Los Angeles, he also became known as somebody who could really make a lot of things happen in the movie industry with the syndicate. And I know we'll talk about this a little bit, but for instance, he got involved and ended up going to federal prison for his role in a Hollywood extortion plot for labor peace with the Chicago Outfit, with some people who were involved in that. And that ended up sending him to prison. So in Los Angeles, in Las Vegas, just kind of a fixer, a guy. In fact, his business card referred to him as a strategist. He's a guy that everybody went to get things done.
Yeah, I was reading up on that Hollywood extortion. I touched on that in an earlier podcast. Johnny Roselli, he was a smooth guy. He was a dapper dude who kind of changed his language from the street language to where he could talk to those Hollywood moguls and things like that. And there's a guy named Willie Bioff, who was from Chicago, I believe, originally. He was a pimp, basically, and he was an early human trafficker, of what I've read about him, and forced girls into prostitution and kept them there by means of intimidation. And Bioff was bragging about extorting some movie theaters in Chicago really loudly, and some other Chicago mob guys overheard it, and they jumped on Bioff and realized that you could get in those stagehands unions in Chicago and make some money by threatening to bomb the theaters or throwing stink bombs and stuff in the theaters or burning theaters down and keep labor problems down at the same time, because they got in with the labor unions. And then they moved the whole operation to Los Angeles. I mean, yeah, to Hollywood, to Los Angeles and Hollywood. And Roselli got involved then with Paul Rico. Paul Rico was a smooth guy. Frank Nitti was a actual boss at that time, but he was not that good a boss. Paul Rico was a real boss and a real power behind the throne, and he was a smooth guy, just like Johnny Roselli. I read somewhere where he kind of patterned himself after Paul Rico. He wanted to be like Paul Rico, and they oversaw this whole thing, and Roselli was their guy out in Los Angeles who could go in and talk to these head, you know, Jack Warner and people like that, and be a fixer for them. Of course, how they fixed things was, you know, you give us $50,000 and you won't have any problem with your union, and you give us $100,000 and you won't have any problem with your movie theaters. Because at the time, like, Warner Brothers owned a whole string of movie theaters throughout the United States and distributed their movies that way, so they could go out anywhere in the United States and bomb their theaters and smoke bomb them or whatever. And you know, that all fell. So that's kind of Johnny Roselli's, you know, he got into the movie business that way. And he came back, it sounds like, from your article, he came back to the movie business after they all did a little time for this Hollywood extortion. Would that be correct?
That's exactly right, Gary. He, you know, they extorted enormous sums of money out of these Hollywood studios. And big-name Hollywood executives running these studios paid a lot of money to this extortion group, which included Roselli. Now, they did go down. Roselli joined the army. He was trying to sort of get out of the way of all that, but he ended up being convicted and sentenced for it. Went to Atlanta and I think up to Indiana. Now, They got paroled early. He got paroled early in the late 40s, earlier than his sentence. I think it was a 10-year sentence, and he got paroled, I think, after three years and 7 months, something like that. Part of his parole stipulation, Gary, was that he find a job. So he went back to Hollywood. You know, despite burning a lot of these people in this extortion plot, he still had a lot of friends and a lot of connections in Hollywood, and was a really was a big player. You know, he doesn't get the recognition that a lot of people do in the mafia world. But Roselli was a really big player, real suave guy, real sort of behind the scenes guy. Went back to Hollywood, got a job at one of these Poverty Row theaters that made what then were crime capers. Now they're called film noir. But this was the late 40s, and he got involved with a studio that made some of these B movies, some of these crime capers, which now are considered classics of film noir. When you watch TCM, when you see Noir Alley with all these noir movies that come on, these movies, two of the ones that he was most prominent in, he had a role as a producer, were Canyon City and He Walked by Night, both based on true incidents that occurred around the time they were making the movies. In fact, one of the interesting aspects of Canyon City in Colorado, at the Colorado State Penitentiary, just south of Denver, and long-time penitentiary there was a breakout. When you go watch the movie, it's interesting, Gary, because the actual was kind of a they did kind of a semi-realist documentary style movie. Mm-hmm. It was the actual warden is in the movie, as are some actual convicts of that time. It's just kind of an interesting take. And Roselli he had gotten on originally as sort of a lower level job, paying $60, $65 a week, then sort of worked his way into the producing role and had a heavy hand in it, wanted to continue doing that as time went by, but never really was able to make a lot of money out of movies. But he had a big role in all that movie making process.
Interesting, you know, that whole when that whole extortion thing during the war fell, the reason that fell, Robert Montgomery got to play kind of a real role in real life as maybe not an action hero, but a hero. He was a president of the Screen Actors Guild, and he found out about a lot of this extortion going on and how the producers, the studio heads, were just paying them off and just kowtowing to them, and they came after the Screen Actors Guild, and he was the president of it. And he said, no, there ain't no way. And he went to the IRS, and the IRS started looking at the kind of their main guy out there, this Willie Bioff, who was living a real lavish lifestyle. I mean, you know, Al Capone, somebody, he didn't learn anything from Al Capone. He lived this huge lavish lifestyle. $100,000 house, and during a time when a $10,000 house was a pretty decent house in late 40s, early 50s, middle 40s, and it was easy. It was a no-brainer, and he got scared, and he turned and testified against Paul Rica. Paul Rica's the only time he did in jail was for that, and Johnny Roselli, and there was a couple others. I can't remember. Did Tony Accardo take a hit out of that? I can't remember for sure, but there was two or three others. And another interesting story about what you just said is when they got out of jail, they got those 10-year sentences, there was a huge kerfuffle when they got released after about 3 years. And some of them, they weren't supposed to go back to Chicago, but they did anyway. Tom Clark was Harry Truman's attorney general. And the mob in Chicago in the 1948 election, you know, had thrown everything behind Harry Truman. And it was a close election. If you remember, you know, Dewey defeats Truman, but Truman actually won and became the president. And the mob and the politicians in Chicago had really helped Harry Truman get elected. And, you know, they had all kinds of hearings about Tom Clark and did he... Was this some kind of a political payoff, helping these guys get out of jail and all that? So and it all kind of died out pretty quickly after Harry Truman left the White House. But, you know, kind of reminiscent of some things today. You know, everything old is new again.
it definitely is. You know, the funny thing about it, too, Gary, he was, you know, Roselli continued to have contacts and friends in the movie industry even after he went down on that extortion deal. He was just a real, he was friends with Alan Smiley. Alan Smiley was the guy who was on the couch when Ben Siegel was shot. And so he was really connected with Dragna. Went up in 1927. Lee Server, who wrote a recent book about Johnny Roselli, in his book, Server says he really got to know Capone, Roselli did, during the Jack Dempsey-Gene Tunney fight up in Chicago at Soldier Field in 1927. 300 or so people from the movie industry, gangsters, movie stars, people like that, got on a train and went up to Chicago for the Dempsey-Tunney fight. It was a rematch from the year earlier in Philly. So they all went up there after the fight. Tunney won. That was a famous long count fight at Soldier Field where the referee Dempsey didn't knock Tunney down and didn't get over to his corner quick enough. Then Tunney got up and won it, the Fighting Marine. But so then they go to an event over at the hotel where Capone was. Al Jolson was there and people like that. And so that's where Roselli, this was 1927, so presumably if that's when he first met Capone, that was he was in his early 20s. I think Capone was late 20s. Roselli was in his early 20s then and began to forge a relationship with Capone. Later, Capone went to L.A., stayed at the Biltmore in downtown L.A., and was Roselli showed up to sort of help him. He was being ushered out of town, Capone was, and his group. He wasn't wanted there, so Roselli showed up, and they began to forge a friendship there that then carried over to later years with his connection, Roselli's connection to Chicago, as Roselli also began to make his way into Las Vegas. So it's just real interesting, Gary, how these connections are intertwined, but it really all really gets back to how heavily Roselli was just connected in that L.A. Hollywood movie world. Real debonair guy. He was a real playboy. The FBI, Seymour Hersh, has reported that the FBI says that Roselli was responsible for 13 murders. He was no innocent person, but he was really highly connected with that Hollywood world, and it never went away. Even after he went to prison for extorting them, you would think they would ostracize him, but he stayed connected in that world.
You know, it's people. Lots of times, people, especially back in the 30s, 40s, 50s, on up to maybe the 60s. You know, it was kind of cool to have your pet mobster, shall we say. Somebody, I know a guy, you know, I can get that taken care of, you know, that kind of a thing. And Roselli, he must have been slick and smooth. There's another kind of a well-known case, the Friars Club card cheating case or scandal. He was all involved in that. That was all these high-end people. Tony Martin was a singer. Phil Silvers, I know you've heard of him, was Sergeant Bilko, I think. And then Phil Silvers played Sergeant Bilko and Zeppo Marx, the Marx Brothers, and they all like to play gin. And he said he with some other guys out there, they were all Jewish guys, from the sound of their names, set up this gin game, and they used hidden cameras or peepholes or some. I think it was probably before cameras, peepholes, to see who had what cards, and they were cheating these guys systematically out of money. They say, let me look here. It says as much as $30,000 would change hands, and losses over a period of time were more than $1 million. So that's he could just operate, and he must have been really smooth because he could continue to operate.
Super smooth guy. I think Sinatra is the one. Sinatra and some others are the ones who recommended Roselli as a member of the Friars Club. I think there was a guy up in a crawlway or something who was using some elaborate. I think they would buzz the guy or something
if they cheated. Sinatra did introduce him, give him the intro in. So.
And Roselli was right in the middle of that. And the funny thing about it is, Gary, despite all these things where he caused problems for people who were supporters, he even married a film star named June Lehman. This guy was in heavy, but then he never really, they continued to like and trust him until the very end. Then he got involved. He got involved with Howard Hughes's right-hand man, got him involved in a CIA plot to topple, to kill Castro during the JFK years. And so all that sort of culminated into what ended up being the end of his life. He was found in 1976 floating in a 55-gallon oil drum. I think they had hacked off his legs and to stuff him into that drum. He was only 71. And so, you know, he had a real high drama life. When you look at the arc of his life, the way he had gone from Boston to L.A. as a teenager, got involved with these bootleggers, was a real playboy, involved with all sorts of people in that world, got involved in making films, got involved in Las Vegas with a lot of deal making in Las Vegas, got involved in this Friars Club thing, the CIA plot. The guy had a real action-packed life, to say the least. I mean, he was really a high-profile player. In a lot of ways, it's kind of interesting that he doesn't get the ink and the play that some other mobsters get who are, you know, part of the New York or Chicago crowd, because Roselli was a big-time player, and he's just now starting to get a lot of play. The Film Noir Foundation, which is Eddie Muller's foundation that he runs, the guy who does those TCM Noir Alley setups, his foundation has a magazine called Noir City, which is really fascinating, by the way. It's an e-magazine that they put out. They just did, in their recent issue, Gary, they just did a big piece on Chicago's involvement in Hollywood, and also a separate breakout piece on Roselli, Handsome Johnny, they called him. So he's now starting to get a lot of play, which is really interesting.
Yeah, and another reason he was such a big player that we didn't really realize, when he knew so many people, I think, He just knew so many people. But when the CIA said, you know, we need some help killing Castro and we can't seem to do it, who knows about Cuba and in the seamy underbelly of Cuba? And it's, well, the mob does. So, yeah. You know, first thing they do is they reach out to, I think his guy's name was Mayhew. He was Howard Hughes' assistant, former FBI agent. I mean, this was a... a witch's brew, shall we say, of people that were involved in different backgrounds, the CIA, the FBI, Howard Hughes. I mean, you can't write this kind of stuff. But so they go to Howard Hughes' fixer, and he says, well, let me ask her out. And, you know, of course, Johnny Roselli is the guy. He's the guy that you can find. But yet, and he's really well connected too, you know.
There's Roselli.
Kind of stuff, man. There he is, and so then he moves on that. I mean, he's part of history there. The whole JFK assassination plot, and
it's insane.
Know, trying to kill Castro, and it is. It's insane. This guy, you know, hardly anybody's ever heard of him.
And he gets. I mean, you know, it's him, Giancana, and Trafficante who are in the middle of this plot with all kinds of. When you look back on it, all kinds of really interesting plots. I think you had some poison pill things going on. They were trying all kinds of different ways to figure out how to knock off Castro. They were training some people down, I think, in the Everglades. So it's just really interesting the way he was such a big player. He was even really close to, they called her Judy Campbell at the time, Judith Campbell Exner.
Yeah.
He just is always in the middle. He's kind of the Forrest Gump of the mob world, Gary. He's in the middle of everything. And so, you know, Sam Giancana, the Chicago mobster, and President Kennedy, President John Kennedy, were both romantically involved with Judith Campbell Exner. A lot of suspicion, a lot of accusations about the connection between organized crime and politics. And Roselli was a very good friend of hers. He was very close to her and got mixed up in all that, too. So every time you look up, Gary, with a big mob, mafia scandal, high-profile stuff, movies and all that, there's old Roselli right in the middle of it.
What do you want to bet? He and Judith Campbell Exner were an item before he probably introduced her to Giancana.
I think that's, I mean,
I don't think,
you know,
this guy let one slip by that he didn't have diddle around with, shall we say.
He was very active. I think I mentioned this. One informant said of Roselli that he was sex crazy. I mean, this guy was, you know, he... Server Lee Server in his book tells a story about the daughter of an Illinois newspaper publisher owner flew to Mexico. She had gone out to California in the winter of 1937 to get away from that Illinois weather with her mother and have a little fun out in Southern California. Billy Wilkerson, the Hollywood Reporter owner, publisher, who ended up, you know, at the beginning stages of the Flamingo, is kind of a little sidebar. Anyway, Wilkerson introduced her to Roselli. They go down to Mexico, have a quickie marriage because her parents didn't want her involved in any sexual activity until she was married. Quickly get it annulled, fly back to L.A. Her dad finds out about this, has her admitted to a psychiatric facility where she has therapeutic electroshock treatment. Every time you look up, and that's a fascinating episode of Lee Service book, but every time you look up, Roselli's just right in the middle of one interesting thing after another. He even one of Jane Mansfield's early shows out in Las Vegas at the Tropicana. Roselli put that together. So every time you look up, Roselli's in the middle of something. Really a fascinating character.
Yeah, you got to admire a guy that can walk the line like that and have one foot in both worlds and keep everybody happy until he was 71 years old or 72. I wonder, there's a lot of speculation about why he was killed. I think some people speculate because he brought down all this heat from the hearings after JFK was killed when that whole CIA plot came out. I don't know about that, but he must have. He's not a kind of guy that stole from anybody, I can't imagine, although he probably did cheat people, other mobsters along the way. I never really heard any speculation other than because of the heat that came down out of the hearings after JFK was killed in the CIA plot. But have you heard anything else about
that? Yeah, there's that speculation, Gary, and it was down in South Florida. He was living in South Florida at the time, and so... Yeah, and there's some suspicion that, he'd fallen out of favor with the power. There was a new power regime in the Chicago outfit that he wasn't in with as much as he had been with the Giancana crowd. And so he was expendable. That's one theory. Another is he wasn't kicking back up enough from Las Vegas to Chicago. So several theories floating around. We're going on 45 years now, and there's no it's unsolved. And yeah. Most of the players who were involved aren't around anymore. So, to me, it ranks as one of the great mob mysteries. It's up there with the Hoffa killing. And again, the Roselli thing doesn't get as much play, but I think it will start getting some play because, Lee Server told me that there are some early discussions about turning his book into a movie. Very few mob figures were involved in as much high romance, high drama, high scandal as Roselli, including two of the real big, interesting power bases that have a lot of appeal to people, Los Angeles and Las Vegas.
Yeah, that's true. We were talking about that not much has been done about the Los Angeles mob scene, and there's a lot of information out there about it, just in disparate places. Jimmy Fratiano has a really detailed book about his activities and he's got started out there. So there's then the boats. I looked up after we talked about the gambling boats, and there's quite a little bit of information about that whole subculture. The gambling boats were the precursors to Las Vegas and the whole thing. All the gambling out of Los Angeles area, Southern California, was going on, and that's where Las Vegas came from, basically.
Yeah, back east, some of the Los Angeles mob in mafia play is sort of derided as the Mickey Mouse Mafia, but it was a lot more significant than that. It was because of the money involved in places like Los Angeles and in Las Vegas. We haven't even touched on the race wire that was a big part of the Los Angeles scene too. So there was just a lot of money at play in Los Angeles and Las Vegas that Roselli was sort of the captain of all that in the real big money making years. In addition to the CIA things, there are so many things he's involved in, but I think you could look at the high drama and the romance and all those sort of things that came out of Los Angeles and Las Vegas, and it's a lot more significant than a lot of people really realize.
Yeah, I just happen to think of another speculation. I believe I heard this from Redwin Matt, who's a former Chicago outfit. Some people call him a rat, but I call him, he was an undercover agent because they didn't have a case on him. He volunteered and said, hey, I'll work on these guys for you because they're ripping everybody off and it has any kind of business that they can get their hooks into. And Frank Suisse, I think Red told me that Frank Sweese was down in Florida around this time, and that dude, and he was a killer for that Chicago outfit hierarchy.
The German.
At that time, when after Giancana left, see, Giancana was gone, and he went way back with Roselli, and you had new people running everything, and so that, I don't know. I think Red put him down as a suspect in that, which wouldn't surprise me if that guy was around in the same state and somebody got killed.
Why? So Red, his assertion is that's who bumped off Roselli on orders from Chicago.
It's not lost on him that he was down there at the same time that Roselli gets killed in Florida. So,
I have to
give that some credence.
It's a great mob mystery, and we're about to find out right now. We're in the middle. I'm sort of bouncing around a little bit, but right now the other, I think, huge mob mystery, of course, is the Hoffa killing, and that's about to pop up with the movie The Irishman coming out. But I think Roselli's is up there. You got a guy who is a major player,
like
Roselli, floating in a 55. It's always these 55 gallon oil drums.
It's kind of hard to get a body in something any smaller.
Well, yeah, and I think they cut off. I think they cut his legs off and put them in the. So I think he had a terry cloth gag on his in his mouth, covering his mouth, and so it was a pretty brutal. His body, I think, was badly decomposed. I think at the time, as would be obvious. Yeah. But a big mystery to this day, Gary. There's also speculation, but nobody really knows who bumped him off.
Yeah, interesting. All right, well, Larry, this has been great. Let's wind this thing down. You mentioned a book that you had used to research that. Mention that book, and folks, I'll put a link to the Amazon page for this book. Talk about that.
It's in 2018. Lee Server, who has written some highly acclaimed biographies, Ava Gardner, Mitchum, Samuel Fuller, that film director, wrote a book. That's called Handsome Johnny, and so it's created a lot of interest. It's revived a lot of interest in Roselli, and a very, very, very interesting book, very well researched book. And in the blog post I did for the Mob Museum, I exchanged some emails with Server, and he gave me some good insight into some things he found out in researching the book. Let me just add one more too, by the way, Gary. I know I'm bouncing around. I think there are three great mob mysteries, maybe more. I forgot the Bugsy. So there's Hoffa, there's Roselli, and there's Bugsy Siegel. Those three mob mysteries, we need to know what the answer is to those. Those are three great mob mysteries.
It's too bad that they didn't, that evidence collection was so crappy back then. If they'd have saved some bunch of stuff that had DNA on it, we could go to, these, DNA databases and get a relative. Maybe they've already in Ancestry.com and solved those mysteries.
The evidence collection, as a former officer, you know this better than anybody. Remember the two Tony? You did the thing about the two Tonys. Those famous pictures. Fratiano shot the two guys from Kansas City who are out there scamming. Those famous pictures, Gary, of the car the two Tonys were shot in.
Yeah.
Out in Hollywood, all those citizens standing around the car smoking. The forensic evidence was a nightmare back then.
Oh, it's really only changed in the last few years. I've got a picture. I'm just working on this movie about the Nick Civella and Carl Spiro war in Kansas City, and I'm looking at some old pictures from 1984. Was the last one of these guys that got killed into the mob war. There's a picture of the car lot, the little dealership or the shack where he was sitting, and blew him in his wheelchair up and out into the parking lot. And there's a body laying there with a canvas over it. There's policemen standing around taking notes and looking, gathered evidence and drawing pictures. And there's a little kid, about a 10-year-old kid, up there at the body picking up the canvas to look underneath. I couldn't believe it. This is 1984, dude.
Hey, by the way, I am privileged to have seen some clips of Gary's upcoming documentary, and it is fantastic. That Kansas City Sparrow and Savella War is a classic.
Yeah.
Beyond classic, bombings and killings and grudges, yeah. Which led to, as Gary's reported, which led to really some surveillance audio that broke up the Tropicana skim. So
Tropicana, yeah. It's really interesting that we have a little segment in the movie where I say it, but Bill Owsley, my FBI agent, who was a case agent on that skim case, say it, that they planted one bug to learn about murder in the Sparrows. And they learned about Las Vegas. And then after they kind of got going on Las Vegas, they planted another bug to learn about Las Vegas. And they learned more than you'd ever want to know about the Sparrows. Now, I've got the transcript from that audio. They didn't save the audio, so I'm just using actors to you be able to hear the Savellas plot and plan and how are they going to get the Sparrows. And one interesting thing is they're complaining about how their guys are lazy and won't do anything.
and I don't want to give away too much of what you got coming, but I'm looking forward to it. The way that old school Savella crowd wasn't happy with the younger Sparrow guys Gipper. With the bell bottoms and the long hair. What did they say, Gary? They thought they were hippies and didn't like all that hippie stuff.
Hippie, what's with the bell bottoms and the long hair?
I can't wait to see that documentary, Gary. I'm looking forward to it.
All right, Larry. So now, how do people get a hold of you? They got the Mob Museum blog once a month.
Yeah, the Mob
whole archive of those in the past. So
folks, yeah, the Mob Museum. Yeah, I'm sorry to cut you off, Gary. Yeah, the mobmuseum.org once a month. It shows up. It's called The Mob and Pop Culture. It's on their blog tab on the Mob Museum website. And that's where I am. Email larryhenry5@gmail.com if you got any tips or thoughts. I'm on Facebook. I do a lot of corresponding by Facebook Messenger. It's just a real quick way to reach out to people because it's instant. But yeah, larryhenry5@gmail.com, and then go to the Mob Museum website.
And one last thing. Larry is he's kept the Mob World Summit going for mob authors and filmmakers. So there's been two of them now. We did a couple of them back in 2013, and then there's another guy was doing it, and he since died, and they quit doing them. And Larry revived it out in Las Vegas 2 years ago, and then last year I was unable to attend, but last year they were at the Gangster Museum in Hot Springs, Arkansas, which was an interesting location. Well, this next year we're going to have one in Kansas City, and there is a Facebook page called Mob World Summit on Facebook, so be posting things there once in a while. We're not real active on it right now. I think Larry's posting some stuff every once in a while on that. And we got
need
a website
to pick it back
got
up.
It going. Go ahead.
Yeah, need to get it going. No, but yeah, the thought was to get mob journalists, mob authors, kind of a gathering, just to talk, go over ideas, share ideas. Got a great one out in Las Vegas. We had Ron Fino, we had just on and on, Frank Collada showed up. We had, I know I'm going to leave some names out, the great, I think one of the best mob historians in the country, Gary, somebody who has a lot of respect from both of us, Bill Friedman, who ran Jeff Schumacher from the Mob Museum was there, J. Michael Niota from Los Angeles, great grandson of Jack Dragna, speaking of Jack Dragna. But yeah, Bill Friedman, whose books, I'm telling you, sitting right over here out of camera view next to my computer. Bill's books are a great resource of mine. That guy's a fantastic. Ran the Castaways in the Silver Slipper. Only guy ever to run two casinos in Las Vegas. So now we're headed to Kansas City. Are you digging? I think Gary's digging out his copy. Yep. Gary's digging out his copies of Bill's books. Classics. Classic books. There it is. There it is. I've got mine sitting next to my computer screen, 30 Illegal Years to the Strip. And then the one preceding that, where he gets in a lot of the gangster, even a lot of the Bonnie and Clyde and John Dillinger stuff, All Against the Law. Now, he's working on a third, a follow-up to that takes from the beginning of the strip when the mob guys begin to move into the strip. So that was our first one. Then we were in Hot Springs. Hot Springs, I popped up a piece on the Mob Museum blog site several months ago about Hot Springs. Hot Springs, a fascinating mob place in itself. And then, of course, next year, next summer in June, we'll be in Kansas City. So everybody's welcome. It's going to be a lot of fun. Gary and I are talking about what, Gary, doing some bus tours maybe and having a dinner somewhere and just having a lot of fun.
Tour, yeah, I got a guy I think we can get going, and we'll charge you a little bit extra for that, but we'll do a mop tour in Kansas City and maybe end up eating someplace in a kind of an old formerly a mob-run restaurant, not run, but a mob-frequented restaurant. So, all right, Larry, this has been great. Let me finish this off. If you have a friend or relative that has a problem with drugs or alcohol, make your first call to First Call. Call 816-361-5900 or go to their website, www.firstcall.org. And if you want to learn more about the mob, of course, go read Larry Henry on the Mob Museum's blog. Comes out once a month. You get my movie. You can download it for $1.99. Rent it on Amazon, Gangland Wire. Got the Kansas City Mob Tour app in the Apple Store. I've got a book, Leaving Vegas, How FBI Agents Ended Mob Domination of Las Vegas Casinos. And I recommend that you get the Kindle version, because I hooked all the original wiretaps to each time I used any transcripts out of the wiretaps. You can click on that link and go right to another site and listen to the actual voices of the guys plotting and planning to take over Las Vegas and steal money from casinos. Got anything? Got any parting words of wisdom here, Larry?
Just thanks for having me on, Gary. And I'm telling everybody, please look forward to Gary's next documentary. Gary's, I think, the best documentary, mob documentary guy in the business. And this new one on the Sparrow-Civella War is awesome.
All right. Thanks, Larry. Good night, folks. Good night, Larry.
Good night, Gary.
Music provided by our good friend and super fan from Portland, Oregon, Casey McBride. Thanks, Casey.